Imagine a state-of-the-art skyscraper. Right now, up on the 50th floor, they are installing these brilliant AI-driven smart elevators that can basically anticipate your every move.
Oh, absolutely.
But down in the pitch-black basement, there is a massive $150 billion legal brawl happening over who actually owns the foundation of the building. And, at the exact same time, the soil beneath the entire city is starting to sink.
Yeah, we so rarely look at the dirt being moved around underneath these, monuments to progress. But right now, the foundation of our entire digital landscape is experiencing a massive seismic shift.
Welcome to today's deep dive. It is Wednesday, April 29th, 2026, and we are pulling all of our insights today from a single incredibly dense intelligence briefing that just crossed our desks.
Right, the Tech and Night Report.
Exactly, the Tech and Night Report. And our mission today is to synthesize six explosive tech stories from this briefing and show you how they all connect to form this staggering $150 billion AI power shift.
Because they really do connect.
They do. So whether you are listening right now to seriously prep for a tech meeting tomorrow, or you're trying to figure out where your specific industry is headed, or you're just insanely curious about the digital tools you rely on every day, we are going to cut right through the information overload for you.
I mean, while these six headlines might look entirely separate on the surface, we're tracking everything from a historic corporate lawsuit to global semiconductor funding, right down to invisible telecom spying.
Which is terrifying, by the way.
It is,
Yep.
but they fundamentally revolve around one central question,
Sure.
right? Who controls the future of the invisible infrastructure we all rely on?
So let's start with the biggest number on the board, $150 billion.
That's a lot of money.
It's an absurd amount of money. The historic trial between Elon Musk and OpenAI, specifically naming Sam Altman and Greg Brockman, it officially began yesterday, April 28, with an advisory jury. And the core of this lawsuit is Musk claiming he was fundamentally deceived. He says he invested his money and his time under the strict promise that OpenAI would remain a nonprofit organization.
But obviously, they converted to a for-profit model.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he wants $150 billion in damages. But the fascinating twist here is that he specifically wants that massive sum to go to OpenAI's charitable arm.
And understand the mechanics of how we even got to $150 billion claim, we have to look at the smart history timeline provided in the briefing.
Yeah, walk us through that.
So Musk and Altman co-founded OpenAI back in 2015. They built it specifically as a nonprofit to serve as a transparent counterweight to Google's growing dominance in artificial intelligence.
Right.
But by 2018, Musk had departed the board over disagreements regarding their strategic direction.
And then things really shifted.
They did. The fundamental pivot in OpenAI's DNA happened in 2023 when they secured a massive $13 billion deal with Microsoft.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because that deal is where the structure gets really complicated, right?
Yeah.
They didn't just flip a switch to become a standard corporation.
No, not at all.
They essentially created a capped for-profit entity that sits underneath the original nonprofit umbrella. I mean, it feels a bit like funding a free public library for the good of humanity, only to come back a few years later and watch the management build an exclusive, high-priced, velvet-rope bookstore right in the main reading room.
That's actually a great way to put it.
And they're just standing there claiming the library still exists, which of course led to Musk launching his own direct competitor, xAI, in 2024. And just this month, April 2026, the OpenAI Microsoft deal was rewritten to explicitly remove the Artificial General Intelligence, or AGI, clause.
Right, which was a huge shift in the paperwork.
Yeah, but I have to ask about the reality of this lawsuit. Extracting $150 billion to drop into a charitable arm. I mean, how does a court even execute something like that without entirely liquidating the company? Is this just a punitive, scorched-earth move by Musk to blow up Microsoft's investment?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it functions as a highly aggressive legal strategy that creates an existential threat to OpenAI's current corporate structure.
We'll see.
Legally, valuing the intellectual property of a frontier AI model and then forcing the for-profit arm to divest that value back to the nonprofit board, I mean, that is unprecedented.
Route.
If Musk actually wins, the court could effectively force OpenAI to revert entirely to its original nonprofit mission. The briefing notes the pros and cons of this trial very clearly, actually.
Where are they?
Well, it forces severe corporate accountability onto the biggest player in the AI space, making them justify every structural change they've made since 2015. But on the flip side, it also creates massive market uncertainty.
I can imagine.
Yeah. In fact, right now, the market sentiment for OpenAI regarding this trial is officially listed in the report as high risk.
High risk. I mean, think about that. If you were using ChatGPT right now to draft your emails or analyze your spreadsheets, the company running it is in the middle of a massive corporate identity crisis. And the timing here is almost cinematic. Because this existential legal battle over OpenAI's corporate soul is happening at the exact same moment that they are pushing their technology beyond mere conversation, right? They're pushing it into autonomous action.
Yes, the new agents.
Yeah. Just a few days ago, on April 22, OpenAI launched what they call workspace agents, powered by their Codex model.
And this represents the exact moment conversational AI transitions into a full-scale automation platform.
Right. And the briefing makes a very careful distinction in its FAQ section between the custom GPTs you might be used to playing with and these new workspace agents. Custom GPTs stay inside your chat window, right? They have no memory of what you talked about yesterday.
Right. They just reset.
Exactly. But workspace agents are an entirely different beast. They are external autonomous workers. They integrate directly with your daily workflow tools like Slack, Google Drive, GitHub, Jira.
And they remember things.
Yes. They retain persistent memory across your different sessions, meaning they actually remember the context of a project from week to week. You can set them on a schedule to run in the background, like a cron job on a server, completely offline and without your supervision.
And we have to pair that new level of autonomy with another major breakthrough from April 26.
Which one was that?
Novasky AI's update to their SkyRL library. They introduced the first modular full-stack framework for vision language reinforcement learning.
Okay, vision language reinforcement learning. Let me make sure I've got this. If I'm understanding the mechanism behind this right, we're no longer just feeding static text into a machine.
Right.
We're essentially putting the AI in a virtual sandbox where it can look at a computer screen, click around, and get a virtual treat or reward when it completes the job correctly. Am I close on how this works?
That is actually a highly accurate way to visualize the mechanism. Previously, reinforcement learning, which is a process where models learn by trial and error, optimizing for a reward, it was practically limited to text-only models.
They were just reading.
Exactly, just reading. But with SkyRL, models are trained with reinforcement learning to both see and read simultaneously.
That's huge.
What's fascinating here is that this multimodal capability is the engine that makes something like a workspace agent viable. The agent doesn't just read your text prompt. It can effectively see the user interface of your Jira board. It can read the underlying code in GitHub, understand the spatial relationship between the buttons on the screen, and take action in that dynamic visual environment.
So what does this all mean? It's the difference between having a really smart encyclopedia sitting on your desk versus having an actual intern who reads your emails, updates your spreadsheets, and messages your team on Slack while you are fast asleep.
It's a massive leap in capability.
It really is. I mean, if you're managing a complex project right now, imagine waking up and finding an agent has cleared your entire backlog overnight. But looking at the cons list in the report, the briefing specifically flags job displacement concerns.
Yes.
We're quite literally building digital employees.
It is a pressing tension. I mean, the market sentiment for OpenAI on the product side is incredibly strong. The pros list highlights that team productivity is absolutely soaring because of these agents.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, but having persistent, autonomous digital workers executing multi-step tasks without human oversight, it fundamentally redefines the concept of knowledge work. We are automating the execution layer of the modern office.
It's incredible. And so OpenAI is building this incredibly powerful, increasingly closed, automated corporate ecosystem. But while they are doing that, there's a grassroots rebellion happening that proves power and creativity can still be completely democratized.
The open source community is really stepping up.
Oh, massively. On April 24, a tool called Comfue UI announced it just raised $30 million at a staggering $500 million valuation led by Kraft Ventures.
And the trajectory of that valuation is remarkable, especially given its origins as a single developer open source project.
Right. Today, it boasts 4 million active users, over 60,000 community-built nodes, and 150,000 daily downloads.
That's what?
And for those unfamiliar, it's an AI tool for generating images, video, and audio. But it works differently than the prompt boxes we are, you know, used to. It's node-based.
Explain what that means for the listener.
Sure. So instead of just typing a sentence and hoping for the best, it's more like a digital assembly line. You pass raw digital noise through a series of sequential filters. So you have a node for lighting, a node for character pose, a node for texture. You physically connect these digital logic boxes on your screen to dictate exactly how the image is built step by step.
And the Tikkun analysis points out this massive valuation is a direct threat to a giant like Adobe.
Yeah, Adobe builds tools like Firefly and the Creative Cloud, where the AI is locked inside a paid proprietary ecosystem.
Right. Whereas Comfy UI is free, open, and endlessly customizable because of those 60,000 community-built nodes. The market thermometer in our briefing explicitly lists Adobe as being under pressure because of Comfy UI's rise.
It represents a philosophical split in how we approach creative software.
Absolutely.
But I want to push back on the hype for a second. The report explicitly lists a steep learning curve under the cons for Comfy UI.
It does.
I mean, if it operates like a complex digital assembly line, that sounds exhausting for the average user. If the learning curve is that steep, how did an open source project get 4 million users? Is Adobe actually in real danger here? Or is this tool just for the ultra-nerdy power users who have 10 hours to tinker with digital wires just to make one image?
The FAQ section of the briefing actually addresses that exact demographic question. Comfy UI is not aimed at the casual user typing a quick prompt into their phone.
Okay.
It has been adopted by professional graphic designers, filmmakers, and studio creators.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. When you use a basic text prompt in tools like Midjourney, you are fundamentally rolling the dice. You have very little control over the exact output. But Comfy UI's node-based assembly line gives a professional, granular, specific control over every single pixel of an image or frame of a video.
So it's about control.
Exactly. The steep learning curve is simply the price of admission for absolute precision. This $500 million valuation proves that open source AI isn't just a fringe hobbyist movement anymore. Professionals are willing to learn a highly complex open source tool if it grants them unparalleled, unrestricted power over their art.
And that legitimately disrupts legacy companies like Adobe.
Right.
We are seeing power users demand total control over their software. But, you know, that brings us to an even bigger issue of control.
Yeah.
Because whether you are using a grassroots open source node network like Comfy UI, or you're deploying a billion-dollar closed source autonomous agent through OpenAI, absolutely none of this software exists without the physical silicon to run it.
Hardware is everything.
Right. We're spending billions to secure the physical silicon of the future, and nations are scrambling to control the hardware supply chain. Today, April 29, the UK announced its national AI hardware strategy.
Yes, they are targeting a substantial $50 billion of the global AI chip market to build a complete ecosystem right in the UK.
From start to finish, right?
Right, spanning from initial chip design all the way to domestic production facilities.
Now, the global landscape provided in the briefing puts that number in stark context. You have the USA's CHIPS Act sitting at $52 billion to boost domestic manufacturing. You have China pushing aggressively for total independence from NVIDIA with their Huawei Ascend chips, a push backed by over $100 billion.
Right.
You have the EU's European Chips Act at 43 billion euros. And now the UK with a $50 billion target. But looking at the cons list for the UK strategy, it bluntly states it will take 4 years to results.
Because building fabrication plants takes time.
Exactly. And training the specialized engineering talent required for advanced lithography takes immense time. If China is dropping over $100 billion and the U.S. already has a massive head start in both design and fabrication, isn't the U.K. 4 years too late to this hardware party?
This raises an important question, but looking at this purely as a race to have the highest volume of chips misses the broader geopolitical strategy.
Okay, how so?
Well, the AI chip war is going global because nations are recognizing that total reliance on foreign supply chains is a critical national security vulnerability.
Right. They don't want to be caught off guard.
Exactly. Even if the UK doesn't match the sheer manufacturing volume of the US or China, establishing a domestic ecosystem, meaning they have the sovereign capability to design, fabricate, and package advanced silicon. It guarantees they won't be entirely paralyzed if global supply chains freeze or, you know, if a trade war cuts off their access.
This makes a lot of sense.
Furthermore, the pros list notes that injecting another $15 billion into the global ecosystem brings much needed competition to AI chip manufacturing. Expanding the global capacity ultimately drives down costs, which benefits everyone running these models worldwide.
Wow. So we are seeing nations spend unprecedented amounts of capital to secure the physical hardware of the future. Yet at the very same time, we are completely ignoring the invisible legacy data infrastructure that all this technology relies on to communicate right now.
This is the part that is truly unsettling.
It is. This brings us to a deeply concerning reality. The telecommunications infrastructure we use every single day is actively being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
On April 27, Citizen Lab uncovered some highly sophisticated spying campaigns targeting cellular networks.
They monitored real-world attack traffic that is currently exploiting foundational vulnerabilities in our cellular routing protocols. And they're using this to track users' physical locations.
Here's where it gets really interesting. They specifically found exploits in SS7, which is the signaling protocol for 2G and 3G networks. The briefing notes these vulnerabilities have actually been known to the telecom industry since 2014.
Over a decade.
Yeah, but they were largely left unpatched. And more concerningly, attackers are exploiting Diameter, which is the protocol for modern 4G and 5G networks.
Right.
If I understand the mechanism here, Diameter was supposed to be the secure replacement, but because telecom networks globally need to allow for seamless roaming, so your phone works when you travel to another country, they basically have to leave the back door open.
That's a good way to describe it.
They blindly trust signaling requests from foreign networks, meaning an attacker can just ping a telecom network and ask for a phone's routing info. The result is that attackers can precisely track your physical location without ever touching your device.
And without installing any malware whatsoever. It's wild. The exploit is entirely invisible to the user on the receiving end.
Insane.
The briefing identifies the attackers as commercial surveillance companies who have gained access to telecom operators in jurisdictions like Israel, the UK, and Jersey. And this allows them to send these tracking pings globally.
It is just baffling that we've known about this architectural flaw since 2014, yet standard cellular providers just accepted it as the cost of doing business.
It really is.
I mean, it's like having a top-tier security guard at the front door of your building who meticulously checks the ID of anyone walking in, but who also blindly answers the phone and gives out the exact location of everyone inside just because the caller claims to be another security guard from a different building.
Exactly.
If these commercial surveillance companies can just track us through the cellular network's own routing requests, what is the mitigation here? Are we entirely exposed just by having a cell signal?
Well, while technically any device connected to the cellular network is susceptible to this routing exploit, the FAQ section does clarify that these are highly targeted attacks.
Okay, that's somewhat of a relief.
Yeah, commercial surveillance companies charge a premium for this capability, so they are not generally burning their expensive exploits to track ordinary people. They are targeting high-value individuals. However, there are very practical takeaways from mitigating this risk. If you require location privacy, the briefing recommends enabling Wi-Fi calling on your device.
Because Wi-Fi calling bypasses the legacy SS7 and Diameter cellular signaling completely.
Precisely. It routes your connection over the internet, utilizing modern encryption protocols rather than relying on the vulnerable cellular signaling infrastructure to find your device.
That's a great tip.
And for sensitive communications, it recommends using end-to-end encrypted apps like Signal. While an encrypted app doesn't hide your physical location from the network, it does protect the actual content of your communication, even if the cellular network routing the data is compromised. It is a stark reminder that the invisible infrastructure connecting our state-of-the-art devices is remarkably fragile.
We are building skyscrapers on shifting soil.
Yeah.
What a vast landscape we've covered in today's deep dive. I mean, we started with the $150 billion battle over the very soul of OpenAI, unpacking the complex mechanisms of corporate governance in AI.
Right.
We explored how chatbots are evolving into persistent, autonomous workspace agents driven by the virtual sandbox training of Skyrel's vision language models.
Incredible shifts there.
We saw ComfyWise open source digital assembly line legitimately challenge legacy giants like Adobe. We tracked the global escalation of the AI chip war as the UK dropped $50 billion to secure its own supply chain sovereignty.
And finally, we confronted the fragile, invisible reality of telecom tracking via legacy signaling protocols.
Exactly. It is undeniably clear that technology is fundamentally reshaping everything from the creative tools we use to the invisible infrastructure that surrounds us.
The underlying theme across all these developments is a profound, rapid shift in where structural power is concentrated in the digital age.
Before we wrap up, I want you to consider a massive contradiction staring us in the face from today's briefing. Think about the dual reality we are seeing regarding OpenAI.
It's quite the paradox.
It is. On one hand, their new workspace agents are deeply integrating into the world's workflows. They are inside Slack, GitHub, Jira. They're managing tasks autonomously and becoming an indispensable layer of global productivity.
Yeah.
Yet, simultaneously, OpenAI faces an existential $150 billion lawsuit that threatens its core corporate identity. So ponder this. If Elon Musk wins and OpenAI's financial structure collapses, or if they're legally forced to dismantle their for-profit arm and revert entirely to a nonprofit,
what happens to all those agents?
Right. What happens to the thousands of autonomous AI employees currently running businesses across the globe? Can an autonomous digital ecosystem survive if the company that built the foundation is fundamentally dismantled?
A fascinating and precarious contradiction to consider regarding the systems we are choosing to rely on.
Keep questioning the invisible infrastructure around you, and as always, stay curious.